Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for you, as usual. And, Jim, we usually like to have better good martinis than this, but it looks like Congressman Trey Radel of Florida has finally reached the right decision here. You may remember us talking about him a couple of months ago, back in October. Radel was caught buying cocaine at a DuPont Circle restaurant from an undercover federal agent. He went to rehab, said he didn't need to resign, that he just needed to get his head straight and deal with his problems, and then he'd be back because he truly thinks he can effectively represent the people of his Florida district. Now here on Monday, he is expected to resign. There's already 2 to 3 people jockeying for position to run for his seat this year, including the man who used to hold it, former Congressman Connie Mack. But basically, Radel now submitting his letter to John Boehner. It should have happened months ago, but at least it's happening now.
Yeah, I had been one of those guys who had kind of hoped that, you know, Radel seemed like he was going to be one of the rising stars of the GOP, certainly one of their younger faces, and a guy who seemed to have a talent for articulating the conservative message. We also just point out, this is an R plus 11 district, so this is not a tough district for a Republican to win, but he was considered the conservative Tea Party candidate in a five-way primary back in 2012. And then, of course, he has the incident trying to purchase cocaine, which is a fairly serious matter. I believe he has not cast a vote since his arrest, since he's checked into rehab. It's deeply disappointing. Probably best that he gets, as you said, get his head on straight and figure out some other way to use his talents and not be the person representing this district. My guess is you will see a fairly quick special election held. This is a, like I said, a Republican seat. Republicans are, you know, going to want to have that seat filled as quick as possible. And my guess is that probably sometime in the coming months you'll see a special election. Look, Trey Radel with a conviction on cocaine possession, that would be a serious liability in a general election. With Republican warm body number one that they find in this, if they find wins this special election primary, going to be a heavy favorite in the special election general and probably the general election in November as well.
The general rule of thumb on these is if a Democrat had done it, how would conservatives react to the guy?
Fair point, yes.
And I think the answer is pretty clear. All right, on to martini number two now, Jim. And there are many up on Capitol Hill, and their political acumen makes sense to a lot of folks who say, let's not hand the president any wins, particularly ones that would be very controversial within our own party. He's got Obamacare around his neck. We've seen horrific jobs reports. But nonetheless, it looks as though House Republican leaders, Speaker Boehner, Majority Leader Cantor, Kevin McCarthy, the majority whip, said last week publicly that he now supports legalization for illegals. According to people with knowledge of the plan that was drafted at the retreat in Cambridge, Maryland, it's going to call for border security and enforcement measures, as well as providing a path to legal status but not citizenship for many of the approximately 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country. The problem, of course, coming from the right is, why are we doing this when the oxygen is clearly on other issues? A lot of people saying legalization without citizenship is going to get you to about 5 minutes after this passes when the Democrats are going to call that second-class citizenship, so you're not going to gain much. And, of course, there's the assumption on the right that this will get many more Hispanic votes, which I'm not sure has been borne out, really. So what do you make of all this?
I think what you're pointing out, that the possibility of deep divisions within the Republican caucus are quite possible and, in fact, probable. It's an interesting maneuver here, because if you look at even on the front page of the New York Times, they said if you actually talk to those who are in the country illegally and you ask them, do you want to become an American citizen? The answer is not always yes. And in quite a few cases, the answer is no. Basically, these are folks who have come sometimes from Mexico, sometimes from other parts of Central America, who basically say, look, I came here to earn money for my family. I can make more money working under the table here in America than I can back in my own country. They aren't necessarily bad people, but they're not really here to live the American dream. They don't really want to become Americans in both their citizenship status. And if you believe that being an American is a certain philosophy or viewpoint or approach to, you know, life, living the American dream and so on, that's not really what they're here for. They're here to make money and then go back. Someday they want to go back to their home country and live with their families. Obviously, some of them are drug dealers and gang members and you know, very seriously bad folks who we definitely want to get out of here as quickly as possible. Neither one of those do much good for the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party's goal in this is to have 11 million new voters, which is why this might be a little bit of like, you know, three-level chess maneuvering by these guys to say, well, look, we're putting an offer on the table. an offer on the table that would not deport a large portion of these folks and, in fact, give them permanent resident status but not U.S. citizenship. I think your prediction of what the Democratic response will be is spot on, though, that basically the problem is we're trying to navigate a very complicated problem with an opposition whose sole objective in life is getting 11 million new voters. We don't want that for obvious reasons. Like, not only it would not be good for the party as well, but I don't think it's good for the country to take 11 million people who have already broken one law and who, as I've said, may or may not be interested in being American citizens, and to basically decree that they are citizens in order to politically benefit one party. This is an asinine way to make laws, but that's what they're wanting. That's why, you know, everyone says, oh, we should do something about immigration. Yes, but the problem is the interests of the two parties are diametrically opposed on this. In light of that, we shouldn't be surprised that we, you know, don't see compromise on this. When the public kind of whines, oh, why can't the Republicans and Democrats get together on this? Well, there's your issue there. People are going to disagree because they want different things out of the policy. And I find a lot of the whining about the lack of immigration bill overwrought and backdoor way of pressuring Republicans to sign something into law that probably isn't going to be in their best interest at all.
Yeah, another sign of the times. I can't remember if this was one of the leadership or Paul Ryan giving a speech, and they said because they don't trust President Obama to enforce the border security aspects of the bill, they want to put specific language in the bill that says he has to enforce the whole law, which I'm not sure would make it any more binding from his perspective. But
if you ignore one part, right. He doesn't trust him, so we're going to make him we don't trust him, so we're going to make him promise.
That's right. On to the crazy martini now. And again, this isn't the craziest thing we've ever seen, but it is definitely driving a debate within the Republican Party. As we mentioned last week, in conjunction with the Mike Huckabee story, the Republican National Committee was having its winter meeting here in Washington. And one of the things that Reince Priebus, the chairman of the RNC, was really focused on was kind of shrinking the primary schedule in a couple of different ways. Number one, they want to move up the convention to sometime between mid-June and mid-July. I think this is so the money can start flowing sooner because Mitt Romney was kind of hamstrung there. But also they want to compress the primary schedule. In the one sense, you get the infighting over faster. On the other hand, you can potentially get a knee-jerk nominee like the Democrats when John Kerry won the first one. And 2 weeks later, it was pretty much a fait accompli that he was going to be the Democratic nominee.
My distinguished colleague Quinn Hillier lays out his opposition to these changes. Basically says Republicans may eventually regret this. He sees a much more abbreviated primary schedule. He thinks this is probably good news for whoever the front runner is. It probably makes life harder for all the underdogs. And he also worries you can end up with a flash in the pan type candidate. That basically, whoever is on top at the end of January when these primaries get started is likely to be the nominee. Those are all legitimate points to make. I think if you look at this primary schedule setup, it's kind of pick your poison. Before, I think almost everyone can agree they were starting too early. It is inane to have candidates campaigning through the holidays. It is inane to have campaign correspondents working through the holidays. Hint, hint. There's really no reason of why, you know, Iowa caucuses have to be held right in the beginning of January. There's no, you know, and so now under this, they can begin no earlier than February 1st. And then the plan is you go, you know, Iowa gets the first week, New Hampshire gets the second week, South Carolina gets the third week, and Nevada gets the fourth week. Chances are that means March 1st or around there is going to be Super Tuesday. As you know, that's the earliest date every other state can do their primary, and you'll see probably a lot of stuff in there. A lot of states, you know, clumping together on that date, wanting to be as early as possible so that they can be as important as possible. Of course, by everybody going on the same day, each individual state becomes less and less important. The aim is to shorten the primary schedule, and I don't think it's an exaggeration looking at last time around. It got too long. And the other thing that when people say, oh, this makes life harder for underdogs, well, life is always harder for underdogs. That's what makes them underdogs. When people feel like, oh, this means that, you know, only a candidate with millions of dollars can campaign. Well, gee, being the Republican presidential candidate is going to require millions of dollars. Welcome to life in the modern political era. That's just the way it is. And I don't think there's much point in us pretending that all you need is a dollar and a dream, and you too can be the Republican presidential nominee. You need a national infrastructure. You need people on the ground in Iowa. You need people on the ground in New Hampshire. A successful Republican presidential campaign isn't going to be done on a shoestring, which means you got to make a name for yourself, and you got to start, you know, convincing people that you should be the next president of the United States well before January. You got to catch fire before then. And so, you know, as much as I can see some people being frustrated by these problems created by this new shorter schedule, I think the problems of a longer schedule are worse. And I think Priebus is getting a little bit of a raw deal in the criticism here.
I have two quick thoughts here, Jim. First of all, regardless of the system, when was the last time a long shot won the Republican nomination? It's been pretty much one of the top two or three folks, unless you go all the way back to Goldwater, and maybe even he was thought to be pretty high up going into 64. I don't think he was the favorite heading in. Secondly, and this is no disrespect meant to Iowa, but shouldn't you know who won the last time before you get to go first again?
Amen. Amen. I, you know, Greg, as you know, I am not allowed to enter the state of Iowa after my vociferous criticism of them last time around. First of all, okay, also, like, I also would have liked to have seen the RNC push for an end to caucuses as opposed to primaries. I like a system in which you can vote whenever the heck you want. I don't like something where you got to go to the local community center and spend several hours with your neighbors chewing your ear off. And you have to vote in public. There's no secret ballot. Unsurprisingly, caucus turnout is way, way lower than primary turnout. It doesn't allow people who are working at night and can't get time off to participate. If you're a parent and you can't get a sitter, you can't participate. And there's all kinds of, you know, shut-ins. You know, there are all kinds of people who can't participate in a caucus that who can participate in a primary. I don't like the idea of the, you know, the first major hurdle of the Republican presidential candidate selection process being put together by whoever's just not got something going on a Monday night in Iowa. You know, that usually gets about 10,000 people, and I don't understand what makes those 10,000 people in Iowa so special. Unsurprisingly, there are about 10,000 people in Iowa who strongly disagree with me and who believe that they should be the ones getting the first veto. And making their selections. Or, you know, even worse, the inane Ames straw poll, which I understand even Governor Brandstad is starting to say, look, it really isn't doing much. Because as you'll recall, the Ames straw poll rocketed Michelle Bachmann to the top of the field back last cycle.
Yes.
And ended the dreams of Tim Pawlenty, who, I, you know, is a two-term governor of Minnesota. You'd think, like, really? He's the first guy we tossed out? Really? Anyway, we'll have plenty more time to argue about this in the years to come, Greg.
I apologize in advance for the hate email you'll be getting from the 515 area code. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Tuesday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.